What's up, everybody? Welcome to the TNT Wellness and Nutrition Podcast. I'm Thomas.
I'm Tyson.
I studied exercise physiology and competed in many various sports ranging from wrestling to ultra running. I use that knowledge to combine today's science with ancient wisdom to live an optimal lifestyle and to spread that information onto the masses.
I'm a lifelong weightlifter and I'm obsessed with health and wellness. My degree in biology, with an emphasis in neurobiology, physiology, and behavior, allows me to take a deep dive into the most current literature and bring that information to you.
Thank you for listening to the podcast. If you'd like to show your support, please rate and review on your favorite podcast provider, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or SoundCloud. Also, sign up on our website, tntwellnessandnutrition.com, for all of our up-to-date content.
Let's get this started. What's up, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of TNT Wellness and Nutrition Podcast. This is episode 71. Today, we're going to be talking about the keto diet and how that pertains to athletes. There's a lot of misconceptions out there that you need carbs to perform well, especially with athletics, but that's not true. We're going to go into that. But first, let's do a quick check-in. So, Tom, how's your week been?
It's been great. So, my training's just been normal. Nothing really new. Just kind of doing long and slow training, up to about 5 miles. It's like my longest runs. I'm doing those probably like 3 or 4 days a week. So getting in shape. But one thing I wanted to talk about is something that we missed on last week was dairy. And not everybody is going to have issues with dairy. I know I have a lot of issues with dairy.
Hold on, because last week we talked about ways to do keto wrong.
Yes, exactly. Sorry, I should have mentioned that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so and the ways to do keto wrong, we didn't talk about how dairy can cause issues for a lot of people. So one thing that dairy can do is it can cause inflammation in the body. That's definitely a negative. People don't want to have inflammation. That can lead to some like weight gain, some joint issues, skin issues, like acne, stuff like that. So if you are experiencing any of that, I recommend cutting out dairy. Or if you've never like cut out dairy for 30 days or so, maybe you should try it. Because overwhelmingly, like I think it's 2/3 of the population, somewhere around there, has some sort of sensitivity to dairy. And it could be even higher than that, because I'm sure most people aren't really that in tune with their body.
Yeah, when you're inflamed all the time, it's hard to discern what's causing the inflammation.
Yeah, like if you have a runny nose every single day, you just think that's normal.
Yeah.
Like, you know, a lot of that stuff, it's like, oh, that's just normal. But it's really just not.
It's not.
If you've never been 100%, you don't know what 100% feels like.
Exactly.
Yeah, so that's just what I wanted to talk about. What's new with you?
Oh, this week, well, I've decided I'm not going to talk about, like, my boring-ass day-to-day life anymore for what's new. Because, you know, every time you ask me what's new,
it's the same as last week.
It's the same as last week, right? I'm always up dumb early. I'm always lifting weights. I'm always eating meat. It's, like, the same exact thing every day. So I decided I'm just going to talk about various research papers I read. So I'm always reading a bunch of random stuff. And a lot of it makes it on the podcast, but some of it doesn't. So I recently read a very interesting paper on ways to increase omega-3s in our blood. So if I asked what would be a good recommendation to increase omega-3s in your diet, what would you say?
Mostly seafood, sardines if you're cheap, salmon if you have a little bit more money, something along those lines.
For sure, right? Some high-quality, super bioavailable forms of omega-3.
Yeah.
Okay? So this paper looked at how to increase omega-3s in the blood and our red blood cells by increasing your saturated fat intake in your diet. And it showed that the people who replaced omega-6 fats with saturated fats increased the amount of omega-3s in their blood twofold. Like, it was actually a pretty big increase. And they kind of calculated, or they concluded that, we've talked about it a lot, that omega-3 to omega-6 ratio matters because they compete for the same enzymes to get elongated into their actual usable forms. So if you decrease the amount of competition from the omega-6 side with saturated fatty acids, you actually increase the amount of absorbed omega-3s in your blood.
Okay. Makes a lot of sense.
So like, it was just actually really cool that it was a study saying, like, and I hated, like, the first line was that it's been well shown that saturated fat can be problematic for heart disease, but, and I was like, shut the fuck up.
But it hasn't been well shown. It's been shown, but very shittily.
Yeah, very shittily, yeah. And, but their whole paper was, like, surprisingly, when these people who ate more saturated fat had better health markers, da-da-da-da-da, and I was like, yeah, no shit, you know what I'm saying? So, it was really cool. Like, that's a new recommendation I never thought of before, that to better increase your omega-3. They said it had an omega-3 sparing effect. That's what they said. Would be to increase your saturated fat intake. So,
I mean, so basically was that eat less, like, chicken, or was that remove canola oil?
I guess it'd go either way.
It didn't really get into that?
No, it didn't. Okay. No, they just had a diet that was higher in omega-6, and then they had a diet that was low in omega-6, higher in saturated fats.
Okay.
So that was pretty much it.
Okay.
But it's still really cool.
Yeah.
Any study that shows, like, saturated fat isn't this big, like, boogeyman is, like, on, I'm like, all right, cool, I like this.
Oh, yeah, definitely. That's not something I really thought of, increasing saturated fat would do it. But, I mean, definitely removing omega-6s. I mean, that's something we recommend to everybody.
For sure.
It's like cut sugar, cut industrial seed oils. Pretty much like that's the first two steps of any healthy diet. After that, yeah, you can do a lot more.
Yeah, exactly. And then we can get into the nitty gritty with little details about stuff. But, man, cut out the industrial seed oils like canola and soy and then cut out sugar, you'll be healthy.
But that's what that paper showed, basically.
Yeah, it did.
Remove those highly inflammatory fatty acids, yeah.
Yep. So, yeah, that's all new with me. That's all that's new with me this week, just doing more research on that. And looking a lot into, you know, keto and keto for athletes specifically. That's what we're going to talk about today. It's actually really cool. Like, talking about a lot about glycogen. You hear a lot that you need sugar for muscle, so we're going to go into that and why that's not necessarily true. So I hope you guys like it, learn something, and here it is. TNT, wellnessandnutrition.com, whole food nutrition rediscovered. If you are struggling looking to improve your health or optimize your lifestyle, you can sign up for a custom meal plan on our website, TNTwellnessandnutrition.com. Back to today's topic. Okay, so today we're going to be talking about keto for athletes. And I wanted to really talk about this topic because there's a narrative out there that you need a bunch of extra carbs in your diet to fuel your workouts. You need a bunch of carbs in your diet to recover from your workouts. So, and specifically, I want to talk about muscle glycogen, which is just sugar in your muscles. That's what your muscle uses for fuel. So is there any truth to it? Is what's going on with low-carb athletes? Do they perform well? We're going to talk about all of that. The study we're really going to, I guess, rely on heavily is the FASTER study. And what does FASTER stand for again?
It's a bit of a mouthful. Fat Adapted Substrate Use in Trained Elite Runners. They should put and cyclists too, because they did test some cyclists, but yeah.
Okay, so that's what we're going to rely on, because a lot of the studies around low carb, especially some you'll see with a kind of bashing keto, they'll say people on keto diet didn't perform as well. They don't give the athletes enough time to adapt to the keto diet. And there is 100% an adaption window to burning fat than carbohydrates. You know, most people go their entire lives and they burn carbohydrates and they work out, they burn carbohydrates. They never get good at burning fat. It takes some time. So these athletes had been fat adapted for a very long time. We're talking, what, like a year or so, 2 years?
20 or months or more on this type of diet.
So 20 months or more. Yeah, so that's a very long time. So that gave these people and these athletes enough time to really get good at burning fat. So a lot of major things came from this study. This is like a, what do you call these, landmark studies, right?
That's, oh, that's, yeah, the term. Definitely.
This is a big one. So we wanted to devote a whole podcast just to this one study and just show what really it concluded.
So the people who did this study are Bullock and Finney. They're really big in the whole low carb athlete world. Like, what's their book? The Art and Science of Low Carb Athletes.
Don't know.
I should look that up. I'll let you guys know that at the end. But yeah, so this study compared 20 male elite runners and cyclists. These cyclists were running, or I mean, were doing half Ironmans or more. Ironmans include runners, so, or include running in part of that. So these are top runners too. And the elite runners are doing 50Ks to like 100 miles, 100 mile plus, whatever. They're all from ages 21 through 45 and are the top 10% of their sport.
This is the cream of the crop.
Yeah. So like me and you don't qualify for this.
We're not making the cut. No.
The best person, the most athletic person you know probably isn't making the cut. Like, yeah, it's the best person from like your town maybe qualifies.
Yes.
Like the top of the top are the people that are doing this study. So all of them elite athletes. So they separated them into two groups. The 10 high-carb athletes, they averaged 59% carbs, 14% protein for their diet. Then 10 low-carb athletes, they averaged 70% fat and 19% protein. A little bit of speculation. I'm guessing that 5% protein difference is for gluconeogenesis for glycogen stores. Just a little bit of speculation, though. So they did two different tests for this study. The first test was day one, where they determined what their VO2 max is. and where fat oxidation was able to be where max fat oxidation was occurring.
And what's VO2 max, if people don't know?
Basically, your ability to, or how much oxygen you can utilize.
Okay.
That's pretty much, if you want to know how good of shape somebody is in, like VO2 max is like the gold standard at the moment.
Because the amount of oxygen you can utilize, that's going to be like the limiting factor.
Yes, exactly. Because, I mean, we need oxygen to go to our muscles for fuel. Mm-hmm. And if you're not able to deliver oxygen to your fuels, then you're not going to be able to perform as well.
Exactly. So, like in chemistry, I guess to take it back to my world a little bit, you have rate-limiting enzymes. So that's the enzyme that's kind of going to control if the process happens or not. And so this is that. This is going to be, can you get oxygen to your muscles? Okay, cool, you can't perform. If you can't, then you're not performing.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, there's quite a bit that goes into it because, I mean, like, obviously heart health is going to be a big part of delivering oxygen to your muscles. So there's more than just, like, how well your lungs work. Like, you know, you need your heart to work well. You need your blood vessels to be working appropriately and everything like that. So there's a lot to that. And the max fat oxidation, that's more of a test of like, so right now we're burning a pretty high level of fat. We're just sitting down, not doing anything. So what level of intensity can you perform at where you're still burning the same amount of fat? That's what that's checking out. So are you able to sprint with how much fat are you burning? A lot less than what you're doing when you're sitting. But are you walking? Are you burning the same amount? Are you jogging? Are you burning the same amount? Are you 90% of your peak output? Like, that's what they're measuring for that max fat oxidation was occurring. And then the day two test was a 3-hour treadmill test at 64% of VO2 max. And this is where they measured pretty much all the metabolic blood responses. So how much carbs were you burning? How much fat are you burning? How much lactate is in your blood? That type of thing.
Mm-hmm. They even measure blood insulin too.
Yeah, they did a lot.
Very thorough.
Yeah. This was a very invasive test. They were doing muscle biopsies.
Yeah, by the way, screw that. I'm not having somebody go in there and take a piece of my muscle. I work too hard for this shit.
From what I've heard, it is painless, but from, like, watching it, I've never seen it done in person, but I've watched it in videos. It does not look painless.
No.
And I do not think I could let somebody do that to me. Like, just watching it, I would have to look away.
Yeah.
Because, it's like a giant needle. It's like a knitting needle is what they stab you with. And then there's, like, a part that cuts off the muscle and like takes it through, and it's like a pretty decent sized chunk of muscle.
Yeah,
like it looks like it would hurt like hell, but you just don't feel anything.
Yeah, you don't have, I don't think you have nerves, like pain receptors there,
so you don't
feel it. Yeah.
So the 3-hour treadmill test at 64% of VO2 max. So that's, I mean, like a nice low jog. You can be conversating at that pace. It's not like
you think an average person could have a conversation at that pace.
Well, so it's 64% of what your VO2
max. Of their VO2 max.
Yes. Okay. So could I have a conversation at 64% of these people's VO2 max? Probably not, because that's going to be a sprint for me. But of my own, like a 64% of my VO2 max is me, probably a nice slow jog. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I could do that.
Got it.
I think most individuals should be able to. So what were the results of this study? So day one, both groups had very similar VO2 max measurements. We would expect that because these are the top of the top of their sports. So for the high carb, it was 64.3. For the low carb, 64.7. So basically identical.
Same thing.
But here's where the big difference was. Peak fat oxidation was 2.3 times higher for the low carb group versus the high carb group. Also, every member of the low carb group was higher than the highest low carb member. Oh, sorry. Let me rephrase that. Every member of the low-carb group was higher than the highest high-carb member. So that means that all the low-carb athletes were able to burn more fat than even the best fat burner that was a high-carb athlete.
Yeah, so the worst low-carber was better than the best high-carber.
Yes, at burning fat.
Mm-hmm.
Which, when you're talking about these ultra-endurance sports, you have so much more fat on you. Even these skinny little elite runners have so much more fat on them than they do carbohydrates.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, peak fat oxidation is a big thing to be measuring here.
And this study actually changed textbooks. They had to change. There was a kind of an upper limit set years ago, actually all of nutrition history, that 1 gram per minute was the max for fat oxidation. And this study just blew that out the water. They found people burning 1.8 grams a minute. That we're talking 80% difference. That's huge.
Yeah, that's not that we were wrong. We didn't have a fucking clue what we were talking about wrong.
No.
Like, you're almost 100% wrong. Like, that's clearly wrong.
Like so wrong. Yeah. And it'll make sense because if you look at the fat oxidation for the high-carb athletes, they did range around that 0.7 to upwards of 0.9. So it makes sense that they say, okay, these are the top athletes, and they don't even get to one. Okay, so one's, like, our theoretical maximum. But no, they were wrong.
So the percentage of VO2 max where peak fat oxidation was still able to occur was so much higher for the low-carb group. So the low-carb athletes were able to go at 70% of their VO2 max and still have peak fat oxidation, where the high-carb group was only at 55%. That's a pretty big difference when we're talking. So, like, I mean, 55% of your VO2 max, you're not performing very well. You're definitely not competition pace. Like, you're not.
Yeah, because you just said 64% wasn't too crazy.
Yeah. And then we're talking 70% of your VO2 max, you're starting to get into your competition pace. Like, usually your competition pace, depending on what sport you're doing. I mean, if you're doing a sprint, you're at 100% of VO2 max.
Yeah.
But, like, these long endurance-type athlete or sports, you're going to be, like, around between, like, 70 and 85. Okay. Somewhere around there is where you're going to be trying to maintain. So they're almost at their, like, competition pace, burning almost the same amount of fat as if they would be sitting down having a conversation.
Mm-hmm.
That's insane.
And that's a huge advantage.
Oh, a major advantage. Because these same athletes, these incredible fat burners, they're still just as efficient at burning carbs as the high-carb athletes are. Like, our bodies are so good at burning carbs. Like, we're designed to burn carbs because we can't store them. Yeah. So we want
to
get rid of them.
It's easy to burn carbs.
You don't lose that ability.
Yeah.
That ability is going to stay with you. So the conclusion for the day one, the high-carb athletes use greater amounts of fat for fuel during exercise and could perform at greater intensities before using more glycogen. And usually your glycogen is going to be the limiting factor for these, like, crazy sports.
Oh, wasn't it low-carb athletes use greater amount of fats for fuel?
Yes, that's right.
Sorry. Okay, just catch that. Yeah, so say that again.
Thank you for that. Low-carb athletes use greater amounts of fat for fuel during exercise and could perform at greater intensities before using more glycogen.
And that's going to be great because, like you said, the glycogen pool, not very big.
I mean, for me, it's probably 1,500 to 2,000 calories, which isn't a lot. And it's not only my muscles that are competing for that. Like, there's certain, there's a lot of tissues that can only use glycogen or glucose.
Mm-hmm.
Like, our brains, there's parts of it that red blood cells, hey, you're going to need this stuff. Like, you need your blood.
Yeah, it's not going to all go to your muscles.
Yeah. And usually what makes people stop running and, like, hit that wall is low blood glucose, because your body doesn't want you to train so hard that you're going to go brain dead, or that you're not going to be able to fuel other parts of your body. So it makes you shut down to spare some of that glucose. That's usually the limiting factor. All right, so that's day one. Day two now. So 180 minutes, that's 3 hours, running at 64% of VO2 max. Again, 64%, yes, that's pretty fast, but I mean, it's conversation pace. It's nothing crazy. So the similar amounts of calories were burned by both groups. It was 12.4 for the low carb, 12.2 for the high carb. Damn near identical.
That's calories per minute.
Yes, calories per minute. However, the breakdown of the calories were drastically different. So the low carb athletes were burning 88% fat. The high carb athletes were burning 56% fat. So that means they were tapping into their glycogen. I mean, 56% fat means 44% glucose. Like, that's a pretty significant amount versus 12% glucose for the low-carb athletes.
Yeah, so, 88 is so high. That's crazy.
I mean, I don't even know if I'm at 88% right now.
Yeah,
I don't know. These people are out there running, training, doing this.
Yeah, such an advantage.
Major advantage. And then they also measured their glycogen. And this is where the real significance of this study comes out. So post-exercise, both groups had very similar muscle glycogen breakdown. Their levels were pretty identical. I don't want to really go through the numbers. So they were giving a recovery shake post-exercise, and then they measured 2 hours after their recovery shake to see where their muscle glycogen was at. So the low-carb group was fed a shake of 5% carbs, 81% fat, and 14% protein.
The classic keto macros.
Oh yeah, 5, 80, 15. Perfect. The high carb group was fed a shake of 50% carbs, 36% fat, and 14% protein. So same protein for both groups, just the macros were different for the carbs and fat. So 2 hours after the recovery shake, both groups had similar levels of muscle glycogen concentration. So after exercise, they both broke down the same amount of glycogen, but they were also, after they recovered, to have the same amount of muscle glycogen. So what that means is you don't need a shit ton of carbs to have muscle glycogen.
Yeah, see, this is... See, to us, this is kind of like groundbreaking. But for that layman out there, it's kind of hard to understand because... So muscle, all muscle glycogen is glucose stored within our muscles, right? So it makes sense that the narrative out there is that you need to ingest a ton of carbohydrates to make sure your muscles are always full of glycogen. They'll say, like, you know, before a wrestling match, you'll have a, like, big spaghetti dinner.
Carb loading,
exactly, right? You want to make sure your muscle glycogen is kind of topped off. And from a top level perspective, that makes perfect sense. Okay, more sugar in our body, more sugar in our muscles. But this study showed that these people who do not ingest carbohydrates at all or very little are able to replenish their muscle glycogen just as well as people who eat carbohydrates throughout the day. That's groundbreaking. It was never really shown before so elegantly, you know?
Yeah, all right. I mean, just look at the shakes. 5% carbs, they were able to get the same amount of muscle glycogen from a 50% carb. I mean, that's insane. That's 10 times more carbs.
And they were
able to get the same effect.
Insane, yep.
Not to mention that carbs are not essential. So, like, you're getting so much extra stuff from it that you're not actually getting any sort of benefit from. But, like, the fat, there's tons of essential fats, and vitamins are also fat-soluble, or most of them are. So you're getting a lot of benefits from eating a shit ton of fat.
Yeah, exactly. And just think, I mean, we're not talking about the, like, hormonal response to carbohydrates today, but you drink a drink that's 50% carbohydrates, that's going to be a major insulin spike. And to these athletes, does it really matter? No. And like I said earlier, you know, you're lean, you're healthy. Does fructose really kill you? No. But to the majority of people out there, a 50% carb drink is a problem. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah.
From a metabolic perspective, a drink that's 80% fat is way more healthy than a drink that's 50% carbs.
Yeah, and just to touch on something you said, like, the 50% carbs, probably a lot of these athletes can probably still have pretty good body composition. But there's a ton of athletes that work out a shit ton that don't have good body composition.
Yes.
Have you ever watched the NFL? Do you watch the line? There's a lot of fat linemen out there. Have you heard of Daniel Cormier? He wrestled at 185s in college. He's a fighter now. He's a heavyweight. And, I mean, every time I've seen him, he's never looked ripped. I don't know if I've ever seen him with a six-pack, except for when he was in college. And is it that he's not working out enough? I'm pretty sure he works out more than anybody that I know. Like, that fool is working out like hell and doing, like, crazy intensity stuff. So it's probably, like, the body composition is that he's on a 50% or more carb diet.
Yeah. No, I, oh, God. I have to edit what I say now a lot. Too much people listen to this shit now. But, so I always
he's see... wrong. Tell more people to listen to it. We can never have enough listeners.
That's true. But so I see a lot of posts about pictures of people from the gym. You know, let's say from somebody close in my life. I don't know who it is, but you know, connect the fucking dots. But and it just every time I don't say this to her because it's rude, and they're all friends, you know. But I just see them, and I'm like, this is proof. And these people train every day. I mean, this is proof that exercise does not equate to weight loss.
No.
Because guess what? They all chubby. You know what I'm saying?
Sumo wrestling wouldn't be a thing.
Yes. You know what I'm saying? Yes.
You want to tell a sumo wrestler that he needs to work out more? I don't think that's going to work.
It's just funny, man. It's all about diet. It really is.
I mean, it's about both, but yeah. Like, a lot of it does have to do with diet.
Yeah.
Okay. So what does this study really mean? So after adequate time to adapt to a high-fat diet, there are no significant differences in muscle glycogen between low-carb athletes and high-carb athletes. That is so key.
Huge.
There's so many, like, sports nutritionists out there that think that you need to be on a high-fat diet for muscle glycogen.
High-carb diet.
High-carb diet. Sorry. I'm going to mix that up so many times.
I know.
So while this study was only testing ultra-endurance athletes, the results with muscle glycogen levels should translate to other sports as long as there's adequate adaptation.
And that's going to be key. Like I said earlier on, there's a lot of studies that show a detriment to performance with a keto diet. But if you put someone on a keto diet for 3 days and say, okay, now we're going to crush you in the gym, it's going to be hard. There's going to be a dip in performance.
So like right now, if let's say you're used to working the morning shift. Okay, tomorrow you're going to work graveyard. Do you think your performance is going to drop?
Yes.
Yeah, probably. But, like, okay, what happens if we decide to measure your performance after you've been working graveyard for 6 months? Do you think your performance is going to still be incredibly low?
Like, no, you're going to adapt.
You're going to adapt. Like, our bodies aren't dumb. Like, we're great at adapting. That's why we've been around for so damn long. Like, yeah, you just need to give your body some time to adapt.
That's such a great, what is that, a metaphor? Such a great example. I mean, that's crazy.
Yeah, I mean, it's like just with anything. You try something new, you need to get better at it. Like, you will.
But it's just, it shows almost the ignorance of a lot of these researchers and saying, like, okay, if ketosis is just ketones in the body, that's all ketosis is, let's put them on a keto diet. Once they're, they usually measure beta-hydroxybutyrate, once that gets to 0.5, okay, you're in keto, now go run this race.
Yeah.
They don't understand the mechanisms behind it. All the machinery that your body needs to make to better burn fat, that takes months and months to get good at.
Yeah, definitely. And we've talked about this so many times, about how our bodies prefer to burn alcohol first. After alcohol, it prefers to burn carbohydrates or glucose. And then after that, it'll start burning fat. So if there's tons of carbs around, your body's going to burn the carbs. Like, it's just what it's used to and what it wants to do. But, like, after time, like, hey, your body has all this fat. Let's start using it.
Yep.
So, like...
And that's because a lot of sugar is bad, by the way. It's not because a lot of sugar is good. Your body's like, yo, get this shit out. Let's use it.
It can't store it. If it stays in the blood, it's going to...
It's a problem.
It's going to kill your kidneys, your heart disease, or your blood vessels. It's going to cause a shit ton of issues.
Yes.
So, yeah, we don't want high blood or high blood sugar. So, yeah, there's so many different things with that. This was such a great study. I'm finally glad, like, I took the time to really read through every single part of it.
Yeah.
I've, like, read through the abstract and, like, the results a couple times, but actually reading through the entire study was, I don't know, pretty enlightening just to see, like, what they were actually doing.
Yeah, no, for sure. Me too. Like, I've used this study just in, I guess, for support for arguments, you know, talking about glycogen, because I already knew the results of it, but going through it, I don't know, man, these people, it's a lot of work to do studies like this.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And you also need, like, you need really good volunteers. Like, a lot of people were volunteering for this study. I'm sure a lot of low-carb athletes were, because they just wanted
to prove the point.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
So there are also other, like, benefits. Well, I guess this is, we didn't even talk about a benefit. We just said that low-carb and high-carb athletes are equal when it comes to glycogen. Mm-hmm. So are there benefits to being low-carb? There sure as hell are. One of the best ones, we both experienced this, is just better body composition. When I first went low carb, I was eating, I guess, like a typical standard, or not a typical standard American diet, but like a whole food American standard American diet.
Yeah.
I went keto, upped my calories by about 1,500 a day, lost 15 pounds and about 2 inches off my waist that first month. And I wasn't fat. I was working out all the time. Didn't change the amount I was working out. I just changed my diet because I was working out so much and eating what I thought was the right foods for so long. I was like, why am I not looking better than I did in high school?
Yes.
Like, I'm working out more. I'm working out smarter.
I know more.
Yeah, like, I should be better at this. And then as soon as I go keto, it's like, oh, that was a cure.
Just drop the carbs. And I mean, just let's be honest. So I love working out, right? You love working out.
Yeah.
It's in our DNA. We are in the minority, okay? Most people work out simply because they want to look better, and I totally get that. They want better body composition. So low carb allows those workouts to be more effective in actually changing how your body looks. And I think that's a huge motivator for a lot of people out there.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And if we just want to bring it back to athletics, so better body composition, what we mean by that is pretty much lower body fat.
Yeah.
So with somebody, like we talked about Daniel Cormier, would it be better for him to have lower body fat?
Yeah.
I would think so. So if he does have to cut weight, that's going to make that cut a lot easier. He'll be able to have a lot. Or he's also in a weight class sport. So if he has, 20 pounds of body fat on him, that's 20 pounds of muscle that he's not allowed to have. So you bring that 20 pounds of body fat down to like 10 pounds. Now he's able to have an extra 10 pounds of body fat or muscle to make up for that. Yeah. So yeah, he's a much better athlete at the same body weight. So that's what we're talking about here.
Yeah, he was the UFC heavyweight champion. So we're talking, again, elite athlete. And I mean, he still got by even though he's super chubby. But could he have been better? Sure. Honestly, with his body type, could he have fought at 185? 100%.
He wrestled at 185. So yeah, he would have dominated 185.
Would have dominated 185. But it's just his diet. And maybe there's other factors involved. It's not like I really know the guy personally. Obviously, I don't. But people like that, they can perform better if they were able to lose more body fat.
Well, like, just think of it like this. If he's strong as a heavyweight, what will he be at 185? Because he'd be carrying around similar amounts of muscle.
He'd be a beast.
The strongest person at 185 ever?
Yeah, because the heavyweight, I think the max heavyweight is 265. That's like the upper limit.
Yeah. Crazy. And he's nowhere near that.
No, he's too short. He's a small guy.
So yeah, just a low-carb diet is perfect for weight class sports just because of that. And honestly, like, what sport isn't it better to have less weight to carry around?
Yeah, that's, like you said, sumo, maybe not?
Yeah, I mean, offense and defense alignment.
Yeah.
I mean, where you want to be fat, so you're heavier, or you're harder to push around. Mm-hmm. I mean, those are, like, the only ones, but other than that, like, it's better to have less weight for you to carry. That's less wear and tear for your body, your joints. If you're running, that means it's less weight for you to carry for 100 miles or whatever you're doing. Yeah, there's just so many benefits of just having lower body fat and just higher muscle mass. This is, like, the best one that made me stick to it is just more energy. It's often called the bonk-proof diet. Bonk-proof just means, like, you don't hit that wall while you're running. It means something completely different in England.
That's a term, I don't really know nothing about that term. That's, like, a marathon term. People talk about that. If you do, like, you run 100 miles or you cycle on your bike for a couple hundred miles, they talk about hitting the wall. This is what the term they use for that.
And honestly, like, you don't even need to be running at crazy distances like that. Like, I just remember hitting that wall wrestling or just doing something like
sure.
that. And that's just, like we talked about earlier, it's just that your glycogen stores are getting dangerously low, so your body just has to shut down because it's not trained to use body fat, or at least be able to use body fat and keep going at the intensity that you want to go at.
Exactly, yeah.
So that's one. And the other one that not a lot of people talk about, and I don't really know how you could scientifically prove it, but it's just like the mental clarity aspect of this. So the example that I want to use is the Final Four back in was early 90s. Chris Webber's on Michigan.
The Fab Five.
Yeah, and he calls a timeout, like the worst time. They're out of timeouts. It's a technical foul. It's a big deal. It's one of the biggest, I guess, like choke jobs in sports.
Oh, they have documentaries about it.
Yeah, Chris Webber hates those. He has no part of any of the Fab Five stuff because I don't know if it's because of that or just some of the other aftermath. There's a lot going on with
the Fab Five story stuff. Has a lot of layers.
Yeah, but whatever. So the Chris Webber timeout.
But he made a mental mistake.
Yeah, mental mistake. Most people are just going to say he choked. That, you know, hey, this elite level athlete, one of the best basketball players in the nation at the time, Hall of Fame basketball player, couldn't live up to the moment and just choked. Okay, I mean, it's a simple explanation. You could do that. The other explanation you could use is that it's the end of the game.
Playoff game. This is when they're in tournament.
Yeah. He is physically exhausted. If he's physically exhausted, I'm willing to bet that his glycogen stores are incredibly low. If his glycogen stores are incredibly low, that means that his brain isn't getting adequate nutrition either. So he's probably not able to think clearly. So if his body was running off of ketones for either at this point in the game or throughout the rest of the game, sparing a lot of that glycogen, he would probably be able to think a lot clearer, have much better mental clarity, and would not have made a costly mistake like that. Because I'm pretty sure they even told him, like, minutes before that, or even seconds.
We have no timeouts.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it's not like he didn't know. So yeah. It's just like, he just had a little
brain. He knew, he forgot, and made a mistake.
He just had a little brain fart, and I think there's so many little brain farts in sports that you could just blame on just low blood sugar, and then not being able to think clearly.
Yeah, and I think another part of ketones that make them so... We're going to talk about keto and the therapeutic aspect of it at some point, maybe in the next few weeks, but... So ketones, especially in our brain, they don't need a receptor to get into our brain. They can simply diffuse across that blood-brain barrier. That's huge. Because using a transporter or using some sort of channel, even that takes an energy input. Even that takes some sort of, using hydrogen or something. But if this can just diffuse through, that gives your body just easier access to fuel, which is great. And we're talking about our brain here. It is an energy hog. It needs all the energy it can get. So that's another benefit of having fat in the blood, ketones in the blood that our body can use for fuel.
Yeah, and just that ability to cross that blood-brain barrier means that there's less limiting factors going on. It's like, what's the limiting factor? How many ketones you can produce. Not how many ketones you can produce and how many...
Can get across.
Yeah, how many objects there are to carry it.
Yes.
Like, you're good.
Mm-hmm.
So another aspect of it is just lower inflammation. There are ways to do a keto diet wrong that will increase your inflammation, but as long as you're doing it right, cutting out the dairy, pretty much just listen to last week's podcast. We'll talk to you. We'll tell you how to do the keto diet right.
Yeah.
You'll have improved recovery. You'll just feel better from just the lower inflammation. Improved recovery just means faster recovery and overall better recovery. There's so many athletes that come to this type of diet later on in life that just kind of realize like, oh yeah, I feel great again. unfortunately, like, it's too late at that time.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's a lot of athletes that have done stuff like that.
And you get better in that recovery phase. Everyone thinks you get better in the gym, but you don't. Even people like us, I love the gym. And if I could train 5 hours a day and still grow and still not physically break down, I would. But I understand that I don't get better in the gym. I get better in the kitchen. I get better overnight. You get better when you when you sleep or when you recover.
Was rest the word you were
looking for? I think I was looking for rest.
Were you going recover and rest?
That's yes, why? That's what I was going for, and I went to request.
Yeah. All right. And one aspect, I mean, this is mostly to do with, like, endurance sports, is just the simplicity of it. You don't really have to worry about, like, meal timing that as much as you would if you were, like, a sugar burner. Like, if you're a big sugar burner, like a high-carb athlete, and you're on, like, a race or something, like, you're going to have to be constantly consuming sugar. Either from, like, honey.
Gels.
Sugar, Gatorade, that type of stuff. There's a race, a bike race that goes across the country. And one runner was, like, sucking on honey so much that it dissolved his tooth by the end of the race.
Wow, I didn't know that.
Dissolved his tooth. I didn't know that was... I didn't know sugar was that damn strong.
Jeez.
No more tooth. Imagine, how do you... I lost the tooth. How? Sugar ate it away.
That's embarrassing, one. And
not the dentist. The fucking
dissolved. That's crazy. So he probably just had, like, a straw in his mouth. He just had there the entire race and just sit.
I would assume something like some pack. Probably those, like, honey sticks and probably just...
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh.
Wow. Yeah, so, yeah, you don't really need to worry about the meal timing and that aspect just because you got your body fat around your gut. I mean, that's your fuel source right there.
And we all do. I'm saying even someone who's really lean has enough calories around their stomach to fuel them for, I don't care how long your workout is, you're going to be okay.
Oh, for a few hours, definitely.
Yeah.
And then just another aspect of this, the whole, like, meal timing thing. Anytime that you eat something, you need to digest it. What does digestion take? Digestion requires energy and it requires blood. If there's blood and energy going for digestion, that means that that's less blood and less energy going to your muscles for you to run, throw, think, whatever.
Yes.
There's just so many things that it's just taken away from.
Yeah.
So it's just better just to not have to rely on those outside sources.
And that's why, honestly, a lot of this, Tim Noakes talked about this a lot in his book, A Waterlog, that all the athletes before the kind of Gatorade movement and the idea that you needed to carb load and drink a bunch of sugar through your workouts, they all used to run these marathons fasted. And that's because their body just feels better. When you can just focus on one goal, which is just run, you just do better and you feel better. So instead of having to focus on running and then getting your carbohydrates in every 30 minutes or every 5 miles, it's just easier to do it that way. You know, just cut out the carbs. You don't need them.
Oh, yeah, definitely. So let's just talk about some notable athletes that are keto. So the first one, I think I talked about him last week or the week before. I talk about him a lot, is Zach Bitter.
Well, he's a poster child for low-carb athletes right now.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And so he's the first, or not the first, the fastest person to run 100 miles. He did it in 11 hours and something. That same time, that same day, he set another world record, which was like 107 miles in 12 hours, something crazy like that. So he set the fastest time to 100 miles and the longest distance ran in 12 hours.
Crazy records, crazy, by the way.
Yeah. So he's definitely a low-carb, ketogenic guy. He does what I do and what a lot of other, like, endurance athletes do. It's called train low, race high. So training low basically is you're very, very low carb. You're training your body to be as efficient as a fat burner as possible. So what I do, and I know he does some of his runs like this, it depends on the run, is fasted running. Like what Tyson just talked about with those marathons. So, hey, if you're fasted, you have to use body fat. Like, you're forcing your body to use body fat, or you're not going to be able to perform.
There's no choice.
Yeah, exactly. So, like, that's what, one of the things that he does. Another notable athlete would be Sean Baker. Sean Baker and Zach Bitter have a podcast together. It's the Human Performance Outliers.
Is that
it? Mm-hmm. So, Sean Baker, do you want to talk about him? You know a lot more about him than I do.
Yeah, Sean Baker. So, it makes sense, even if you didn't know anything about this study, that maybe an endurance runner could do well on a low-carb diet, okay? The endurance runner isn't explosive. The endurance runner is honestly a tiny person. Like, if you saw him, he's not impressive, okay? No offense, Zach. I know you don't listen to this, but I'm not talking shit, but you're small, okay? But if you look at somebody like Sean Baker, he's a beast. I think he's like 6'5", 250, and he has world records in, like, multiple explosive events. So he used to do strongman back in the day. What's the one where they do, like, they're in the kilts and they throw logs and shit?
Highland Games.
Highland Games, right? So that was one he used to do.
He's a world champ at that.
That's crazy. Like, you have to be strong as shit to do that. And he also holds world records in deadlifts and indoor rowing. And if you don't know anything about rowing, it's honestly, think of sprinting, but you're just on the ground. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, you're going all out. It's 100% effort. We talked about VO2 max earlier. It's 100% VO2 max. And if low carb was a detriment to his performance, there's no way he would hold these records. There's no way he would win a lot of these competitions. And he's a zero carb guy. He's not even low carb, right? He's carnivore. And he does his own form of carnivore where he's pretty much a strictly ribeye 24/7, 365. And he's crushing the game on low carb. Like, performance is not a problem for him. He's doing great.
Yeah, and he's also, like, getting better at a lot of this stuff later on in his years. Like, it's crazy.
Yeah.
So, like, we just talked about two athletes that are basically complete opposites. So, Zach Bitter, ultra endurance. Like, ultra endurance is kind of like an understatement for what the type of stuff he's doing.
Yeah, he's, like, top of... It's crazy.
Yeah, and then you have Sean Baker on the other end, who's doing... Like, so Zach Bitter's competitions are 12 hours. Sean Baker's competitions are 12 seconds.
Yes.
Completely different fields. Completely different, complete opposites, pretty much, when it comes to performance. And yet, being on a ketogenic diet helped both of these athletes tremendously.
Yep. And they're at the top of their fields.
Like, Zach Bitter, he ran in college and stuff. He was, like, a marathon runner in college, but it wasn't anything notable. Not the best in the world, by far. And, like, now, look at him now. Completely different.
Yeah.
So another athlete that I want to talk about is LeBron James. So there's so many different times where he's supposedly gone keto and hasn't. So I'm not sure exactly how long he's been keto and from what time frame. The only time I know is that in 2014, he was on a ketogenic diet and he lost a ton of weight then. Outside of that, I'm not really sure how much time he's spent in ketosis. I'm willing to bet in 2009. It's probably the first time he went keto because he lost a ton of weight when he went to Miami. And I think that's probably the best way to do it, or the healthiest way to do it for somebody like that.
And honestly, I think that's the easiest way to tell anyone's on keto. If you still haven't seen someone in a month, and then all of a sudden you see them again, their face is thinner, and they're down like 20 pounds.
And they look healthy.
And they look healthy. Yeah. Guess what? They probably went keto.
Yeah. And so, like, all right, so we talked about an endurance athlete. We talked about a strength and power athlete. So LeBron James is a basketball player. I honestly don't care what year he went keto, because what's a bad year for LeBron James?
None.
He's been the best basketball player in the world for 10 years now.
At least.
Yeah, I mean, come on. And even if he wasn't the best, he's like top three.
Yep.
I mean, he's one of the best of all time, especially when it comes to, like, I'm still shocked that he's this good now. Like, he's an MVP favorite now.
Because he's old.
He is old, and he's got a lot of miles on him.
Yes.
It's not like... I mean, he's not that old. What is he, 3 years older than us?
Yeah, I guess he's old in basketball years.
Yeah, but yeah. No, yeah, you're right. I mean, nobody's doing this at his age.
No.
And is still, like, the most athletic person in the game at that age,
too. Yeah, he's a beast.
So, yeah, like, if he went keto at any time, definitely didn't hurt his performance because he's been so great the entire time. And he's doing a sport that has both power and endurance. Like, you need a lot of endurance to be able to play a 48-minute basketball game. But you also need a lot of power to be able to jump high, block shots, dunk on people, doing all the things that LeBron James does.
Yeah.
So it definitely didn't hurt him.
Yeah, there was never a year where all of a sudden he went from the best player in the league to, like, a bench player.
Yeah.
Like, it was clear. He's always been great.
And his version of a ketogenic diet is going to look drastically different than almost everybody else. For one, he's 2 to 3 times bigger than everybody else.
Yes.
And then also, he's working out at such a crazy pace that, like, yeah, he's able to get away with a lot more carbs than most other people
would. Yeah, and he'd still be technically ketogenic.
Yeah. So the next one is Chris, it's either Froome or Froome, I'm not really sure how to pronounce that, but he's a 3-time Tour de France winner. He does the same thing that Zach Bitter does, train low, race high. That's train low carbohydrate, and during race day, that's when you're actually consuming carbohydrates. Because, hey, during race day, that extra fuel will benefit you. Like, hey, a little bit of sugar here and there will benefit you if you're running a 100-mile race or biking around the country of France.
For again, sure.
A little bit of carbs here and there will benefit you.
And even the side of carbohydrates that in your brain, it will decrease perceived effort. Even that's huge when, like you said, you're literally riding a bike around a whole country. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah. I forget how long it is, but it's a couple weeks. I think it's 3 weeks.
Like, this stuff is hard. So if you can tell your brain, like, hey, everything's cool, this isn't that hard, it's going to help you perform. And that's on top of the fuel source as well.
Yeah, and that just is going to stave off. I don't know if we've talked about central fatigue or not, but that's just your brain telling your body to shut down because it thinks that there's going to be some like serious harm coming to it. So yeah, if your perceived effort's down, that's going to delay that central fatigue from happening.
Yeah, that's a good thing.
Yeah.
At least on race day.
Yeah, and the training low aspect is very important because that's what's going to make you get fat adapted. You have to train low carb for your body to get fat adapted. And then when you do race, you're able to use those carbohydrates just as efficiently as those high-carb athletes, but their benefit is that you're able to use your body fat so much more efficiently than those high-carb athletes. That's where the big difference is. And so I know we talked about a lot of men, so let's talk about a woman. So it's ketogenic athletes aren't just men. Paula Newby Fraser, 8-time Ironman world champ. 8-time. Like, that's so impressive
that's
to be able
impressive.
To dominate your sport for 8 straight years. Damn, you must be so much better than everybody else.
Yeah, stud.
Like, no injuries. Like, you can't have a bad year. Like, you ran your sport for a decade.
Yeah, and she followed a low-carb diet.
Yeah. So, I mean, like, hey, tons of different athletes, tons of different sports, men, women, giant men, small men. You got everything. I mean, like, if there's not an athlete out there that this could help, I mean, the only ones would be sumo wrestlers because they lose a lot of weight.
Yeah.
And then, like, offensive, like, if your job is to be fat and don't move, don't get pushed around, maybe you don't want to go keto.
Yeah.
Everybody else, I mean, because that's a very, very little population, should be keto.
Yeah. And I think just what this paper really showed is that maybe keto isn't for everybody, right? Maybe whatever. You want to eat a shit ton of rice, go ahead. But at least this paper shows that it's not going to be this inherent like detriment that it used to be, that used people, or at least people thought it was. Like, everyone just thought because from a top level, you needed carbs for glycogen, but now you don't. And it's been shown our body creates its own glucose from gluconeogenesis. It can make it from protein. It can make it from fat. And guess what? When our body, or at least these like primetime athletes are running, doing these, you know, 65% VO2 max, they're burning up so much fat. Every triglyceride in our body has a glycerol backbone. Guess what? You stick two glycerols together, you make glucose. So we have a substrate there to make glucose in our body. And that's what our body does. It makes its own glucose for fuel in a very healthy, controlled way. And it stores it in a muscle and it replenishes the muscle supply. So it's just, it's a perfect system that our body's been doing for millions of years. And our body's really good at it. As long as you train it, you know, you go low carb for at least, I would say, 6 months to a year if you're going to do any of these big events, you're going to perform fine. And at best, you're going to perform the same. And then, at worst, you're going to perform the same. But at best, you're going to have a huge advantage over the competition.
Yeah, in many different areas. Not even just competing, but then also in recovering and just making it simpler, better mental clarity. There's so many just better aspects of it.
Very true.
Yeah. So the book I wanted to talk about that I couldn't think of at the beginning is The Art and Science of Low Carbohydrate Performance. That's by Jeff Follick and Stephen Finney. And then another great book is Primal Endurance by Mark Sisson and Brad Kearns. So those are great books out there if you want to learn more about this like fat-adapted styles of training.
Yeah, check those out, definitely. Yeah, Finney and Follick, they're legendary in this field, so they know what they're doing. We think we covered it good?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, there's so much more we could talk about, but I don't know if we have time for that.
Yeah. No, I think we covered it good, man. You don't need carbs. Going low carb is a way to go for performance. Going low carb is a way to go for your overall health, for your body composition. I mean, I'm all for it. Like I said, right now we're talking about diets we love, diets we approve of, and keto is one of them for multiple reasons, and athletics is one of them as well. So I hope you guys like the podcast. Thank you for listening. You can find us at TNTWellnessAndNutrition.com. We're on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, so feel free to reach out anytime.
Yeah, please feel free to, don't listen to Tyson. We need more listeners. So please feel free to share this episode with a friend or family member. And also remember to rate and subscribe on your favorite podcast provider. That's either Apple Podcasts, Google Play, SoundCloud, Stitcher, and YouTube. Hope everybody has a happy and healthy week.